Welcome to the Fantasy NBA Today podcast.
Good day, everyone. A lovely Wednesday to you all. Got another episode of Fantasy NBA Today here on the docket. I'm Dan Vespers, and this is a SportsEthos.com presentation. The nice thing about the offseason is, well, at least this time we have playoff basketball, but the nice thing about the offseason from a podcasting standpoint is we can jump all over the place. There is no real rhyme or reason to what we do from one day to the next. It's kind of this arc to everything we do in an offseason. The arc right now, we're in the lessons learned part of the proceedings. I don't know why I'm waving around a remote control that connects to a standing fan to my side, but it felt very official. You know, I'll do that with a pen instead. Here we go. Wave this pen around. So right now we're doing lessons learned. Yesterday we talked a little bit about how to save head-to-head leagues, a couple of the things that we could do to hopefully trim the impact of injuries on them, which again, probably won't happen in public leagues, but if you've got a good commissioner you trust, you could implement some of those. Monday, we talked a little bit about some of the stuff you saw during silly season, whether or not any of that actually mattered. And today, instead of exploring more on how to fix head-to-heads, we'll come back around to that. It just, you know, it felt like doing a bunch of those in a row would get stale. I think, again, one of the joys here is that even if there's a topic that maybe requires more than one day of conversation, we don't have to do it two consecutive days. So today, instead, we're going to pivot into a different department, and that's the department of rankings. And we have a lot of stuff to talk about on the rankings front. We're going to talk about the old man squad. We're going to talk about Yahoo's pre-ranks. We are also going to, today, those topics, by the way, are going to be a multi-show extravaganza. Maybe extravaganza is a little too strong of a word. Today, we're going to talk about totals ranks. And there's a lot that I wanted to get into on this, and we're going to do it without getting too deep into the weeds from a strict numbers standpoint, because honest to goodness, I think that if I do that right now, it's just too dry. It's way too dry. Don't worry, we'll have math in there. We'll have numbers, but this is going to be about what creates a winning formula. A lot of fantasy basketball is just math. How a ranking is determined is just math. But that's more so true on the per game side than the total side. Because on the per game side, every category has some sort of value attached to it. And the aggregate of that is a player's ranking. If the good outweighs the bad, they're typically kind of inside the top 70 or so. And then how much the bad outweighs the good, they trickle farther and farther down the board. Players get more and more bunched and so on and so forth. We've talked about that 1,000 times. We'll do a show probably on just rankings in general at some point here. But the reason I wanted to kind of bump this discussion of totals really kind of to the front of the offseason is that I think there's been a push to eliminate ranking by totals altogether. And I think the pendulum has swung too far. Some blame needs to go to me. Yes, me, Dan. I talk to myself. I've talked a lot on this podcast over the last 7 years about how in roto leagues in particular, with a game's cap, per game becomes more and more important. Because you can fill in the missing ball games. Just very quickly, the math on that. In a games cap league, like, again, we're going to use Yahoo's standard settings when we talk about this stuff. In a games cap league, you have 82 games you can use at a specific position on your team. So you have 82 point guard games you can utilize. If you had, I don't care, take a third round type of guy. If you have a third round point guard, which would be, like a Jalen Brunson this year, played in 77 ball games. That's really, really good, by the way. This is going to make actually this one kind of difficult. Maybe we should go with like Trae Young who played in 54. I kind of wish that we could find a third rounder that sat somewhere in between these. Jamal Murray is at 59. We can go third round. Where do we have anybody that's in the 60s there that's a point guard? No. This isn't all that helpful. Come on, Dan. Find the damn name you need here. It's fine. Let's just use like a Jalen Brunson, Trae Young combination platter here. In Roto, the other five games that Brunson missed, you get to just make up with someone else, whether it's a different point guard on your own roster, different guy on your own roster that also has point guard eligibility, I should say, or whether it's someone you pick up, a hot free agent. His replacement, Deuce McBride, for instance. You drop him in for five replacement games. That's great. Because you don't take a zero for those five ball games. But now what if you compare someone like Trae Young, who was ranked 35th in 9-cat? Again, you know, a lot of the negative for him is turnovers, but just roll with the numbers for now. This is 9-cat. He missed 28 ball games this year. That's bad, by the way. It's too many. It's unusual for Trae to be that dinged up, but it also kind of feels like Atlanta is on the brink of retooling, and that may play a role in it. On the head-to-head side, Trae Young was a disaster for your team this year. Missing 28 ball games is brutal, and the way that you know how brutal that is because every time he missed a game, you took a zero, and you could not make that up with some other player. If he was on your IL, fine. You know, someone else gets to start for your team. But it's going to be some god-awful replacement that you had to find in the moment. Atlanta didn't have a backup point guard you could just pick up and play for Trae Young. You had to find some other guy that you could just slot in there. It was going to be someone probably you picked up off the waiver wire because someone goes on your IL, you pick somebody up. It's going to be somebody ranked in like the 125 to 175 range. 125 on a good day. Usually. With Roto, the game Trae Young missed, you don't have to replace him that day. You could replace him the next day, the day after, a week before. You could run up your total with a really good backup point guard and play them alternating even while Trae is healthy. So that's what I mean when I say take a zero. You might not actually be taking a zero in head-to-head, but you have to find the replacement in the moment or you just don't get stuff for that week. With Roto, you have all these other options. You can kind of feel it out. And the way this works out from a numbers standpoint, I said I wasn't going to do too many, but we need to do a little bit here, is that with Roto, you say, okay, I get 54 Trae Young games. By the way, his totals rank was 85, if you want to know what missing 28 games as a third rounder actually equates to. It puts him at the back end of the first pick of the eighth round, basically. That's not good. But then what if you compare Trae Young? Sorry, I didn't finish the previous thought. You get Trae's 54 games in Roto, and you get 28 games of whoever you want that has point guard eligibility to fill in at that spot. We just talked about how Miles McBride was an interesting replacement for like 2 weeks over the course of the year. You could actually use him as your backup there. Doesn't have to be Trae Young's backup. In Roto, you just play a guy when you find a good point guard eligible player, and you chew up the games then. Having McBride later on in head-to-head does help you a little bit, but doesn't help you the weeks that Trae Young is out. They're not on the same team. They're not correlated in any way. So for Roto, you get 54 games of Trae Young plus 28 games of hottest pickup you can find over the course of the year. Because typically, because of positional eligibility, you probably have someone on your team that can just slot in and sort of be your everyday point guard, and then you just slot someone else in, some hot pickup, at a different spot on your roster. Easy peasy. Yeah, you obviously aren't going to be as good with Trae Young down, because the guy you pick up is probably going to be, you know, with Roto, you're looking for those, we call them streamers of opportunity, the guys that can give you inside the top 100 kind of numbers on a game-to-game basis. You can hunt for top 90 or better with your Roto replacements, in a way that with head-to-head, you're just going for the guy that can get you the most possible games as quickly as possible, by and large. So, Roto, you get the 54 games of Trae Young plus 28 games of the hottest replacements you can find over the course of the year. So it's basically 54 games of a third rounder plus 28 games of like an eighth or ninth rounder. Roll that all together. That's what that roster slot is worth to you in Roto. Where the head-to-head side is, again, a guy that's ranked in the 80s by totals, plus another 28 games of a guy who's probably ranked in the 90s per game. So no, you're not going to get probably, you know, top 40, top 50 production out of that slot, but you're going to get an okay number. Because, again, you're comparing against 82 games of some other roster slot. On the head-to-head side, as you sort of compare the two, there's no way to make up the other 28 games. You're picking up someone, and you're praying that they play okay, and sometimes they'll be better, and sometimes they'll be worse. But those 28 games are just gone. This is especially true for players who are game-time decisions for 3 days before becoming IL eligible. And it's especially true, doubly so, if your injured list is full on the head-to-head side. Because I know a lot of you are like, well, whatever, I put them on my IL, you know, I pick up somebody and hopefully they're pretty good. Sure, yeah, that's the case, but what if you have, like, another injury? Now, with Yahoo, they have three IL slots, but only three bench slots. So at a certain point, you're going to be picking up guys that are clunky, because a lot of teams are going to have 13 players plus two or three injured players, and suddenly you're, like, 17 roster slots deep. Your pickup's not going to be very good. And in some cases, if you are overloaded on IL-eligible players, you quite literally are taking a zero. And I guess the question you guys are probably, and I try to sort of think along with listeners in this respect to say, well, what is the thought that pops into your head as I'm saying these things to you? And I don't really have a visual aid today, but I'm going to do my best actually to, for those that are watching, because this one is going live. The question you probably ask in that moment is, okay, Dan, what does this have to do with totals? We'll throw up the basketball monster per game ranking, and we'll probably flip it back and forth to totals at some point as kind of our visual aid here. What this has to do with totals is that the totals rank board is now telling you what a particular player is actually worth if they play X number of games. So in this case, the example we just gave, Trae Young was a late third rounder per game who missed 28 games. 28 out of 82 is 3.5/8, 7/16. Is that right? No, that doesn't seem right. Yeah, well, I rounded from 82, I rounded down to 8, was 10%. Okay, so it's a little bit less than that. In any event, that particular equation is ranked 85th. What about Jalen Brunson, who was in that same range, a little bit ahead of Trae Young? Brunson was number 30, Trae Young was 35, so yes, there was something that separated them, but they're pretty close enough for us to actually make this call. Jalen Brunson playing in 77 out of 82 ball games from a generally the same spot on the board per game was number 18. That difference there, 85 to 18, don't worry about the number. Like you could say, oh, it's 67 slots different. Don't worry about that. Just understand that the impact that that player is having on your fantasy team for Jalen Brunson is the 18th best impact of anyone in basketball. Trae Young, 85th best. And technically, if you're looking at it sort of compared to like what a typical player would accrue over an entire season of production, he's actually slightly below league average for guys that are typically rostered in a fantasy league. And I mean, we're talking about Trae Young here. 26 points and 11 assists over 54 ball games. That's big numbers. But in only 54 ball games, you can typically do better from sort of like random schmo playing in all 82 ball games. But is that oversimplifying to some degree? Yes, it very much is. You'd obviously rather have Trae Young on your team, even in only 54 games, than, I don't know, Trae Jones in 77 games, even though they're basically ranked the same by totals this year. In fact, Trae Jones is slightly ahead of Trae Young. Yes, battle of the Trays. Paul Reed is number 88 by totals. He played in all 82 ball games. Obviously, you'd rather have Trae Young for the 54 games he's healthy than all 82 of Paul Reed, even if by totals at the end of the year, they come out pretty similar. This is in any format you can make a claim like that. And if someone said the opposite, they'd sound like a straight-up lunatic. That leads us into sort of the next part of this discussion, which is, well, what is the game worth? What is avoiding the zero worth? Let's say, in this magical hypothetical we created, you could just drop Trae Young. In that instance, you now turn it into sort of that same roto discussion. Now, that would be the thing you could kind of do if someone's like, oh, Trae Young's going to miss 28 consecutive ball games to end the season or something like that. This type of scenario doesn't happen. We're creating this kind of hyperbaric chamber where we control all the variables. That's not a thing that would ever happen, but that's a way where you could fill in the missing ball games, and then obviously that roster slot with 54 games of Trae Young is so much better. But even without that, even if you basically took zeros for the other 28 ball games, which is what this totals comparison we just created is telling you, which is like, oh, if you took Trae Young for 54 games and zeros for 28, that's worth the same as Paul Reed for all 82. First of all, you're not going to take zeros for the other 28. You're plugging in some crap dink player as often as possible. But also, the games when Trae Young is healthy, he's elevating your team to winning particular categories. And the way we know that is because he's number 35 per game. He's a net positive to your team on the per game side. This year, when you compare basically the top 200, roughly, players in the NBA, or go deeper if you want, the top 75, roughly, are guys that move the ball forward. And I'm showing this on the screen to everybody right now. This is, again, dealing with sort of p-values. So try not to get too deep into the numbers. It's too dense. It's too dry. That line was cut off like right around Jrue Holiday and Jalen Duren and OG Anunoby this year. Jaylen Brown, Pascal Siakam, John Collins. These are the guys that are basically like right on the, are they moving the ball forward? Are they doing more good than harm to your fantasy basketball team, basically? Those are the guys, that level and above, and it's like pretty obvious when you just look at the names here. Yeah, you could fudge it a little, but those guys and above are the guys where you're like, I want these guys to max out how many games they play for my fantasy team, because every time they're out there, they're helping more than they're hurting, like typically by a lot. I know that p-values say that certain guys here are kind of like a net negative. I would generally extend the I want these guys playing a decent chunk of ball games pretty much down to the edge of the top 100. It's subjective. I'll give you that. There's no way to be like, oh, yes, the cutoff line is 75 or the cutoff line is 100. You kind of know it when you see it. And certain players, you know, there's punt stuff mixed in there. But, like, here's a good example. Player rank number 110 is Aaron Nesmith. Does Aaron Nesmith playing 82 games really help your team all that much? In Roto, not even a little bit. You don't want a guy ranked 110 playing maximum games. Roto, that's the type of player you want to squeeze in if you're running way behind on games played. Head-to-head, there is a certain value associated with it because, again, just avoiding zeros does have some value. And I want to, oh boy, this may end up being a two-part discussion because I also want to talk just a little bit about the actual basketball that's happening. By the way, how many games went under yesterday? Say it with me. All of them. Did you guys say it? I hope you guys said it with me. Lakers did cover. Anthony Davis was apparently healthy enough. That was my big question in that one. And kudos to the Sacramento Kings. They came out and they just smoked the Warriors. That game wasn't close right from the outset. But boy, winner take all type of games. If your handicap doesn't start with the under, you're starting on the wrong side. First one, total was 224. It went under by 8. Second one, total was 222. And it went under by 10? Yeah, 10. Yeah, 212. So, I mean, we'll get to the games tonight in just a second here. So back to this totals discussion. And by the way, a lot of you guys watching with us live on social media, I would once again remind you all, please subscribe on a traditional podcast channel. I appreciate that you guys are following me on Twitter. And if you're watching on YouTube, that's also great. But not every show in the offseason is going to have a live video element. We're going to have some shows that are audio only, so those will only go out on the traditional pod channel. So please do find a way to go over there and subscribe. It matters, and I want to make sure you guys have access to every show we do from now until the end of time. So, you know, there's all these other facets about totals, and we're kind of weaving our way through it. The main point, to try to come back to where we started on this, is that I think there's been this push, and I was part of it, as kind of like your resident, your friendly resident, I need everybody to play roto guy, to say, well, totals really only matter if you're talking about a guy with a per game ranking like inside the top 75. Because those are the guys in roto you really want to rack up games. Those are the guys that are helping your team in a significant way. And again, you could extend that down to like 90, 95, something like that if you really wanted to. In roto, there's no value at all, really, to a guy, and this is 12-teamers we're talking about, with an 82-game cap. There isn't really any value to having a guy playing at a 130 per game type of clip and playing a ton of ball games. Even if that player, and basically we're talking about Paul Reed right now, who was deeper than that. Paul Reed was, what, like 150, 160 something? But he played, I don't even know where the hell he is. Where are you, B-ball Paul? Why is the search function not working while I'm trying to do a show? There he is. That's 88 by totals. Oh, right. Okay, I got it. Paul Reed, 145 per game. Okay, see, so I was close. 145 per game he played in all 82 games, so by totals, his rank jumped up to 88. That's what I like to call the false total ranking. Because, first of all, Paul Reed had, you know, top 100 per game value for the month and a half Joel Embiid was out. He was even worse than 145 when Embiid was healthy, you know, more like 175-200 range for the rest of the year. Yes, if you roll everything he did this season together, you get to 88, but there's just so much nuance to that 88 rank. Playing in a ton of games is a big one. Having a stretch where he was actually playable, even on a games cap roto side, having a very long stretch where he wasn't. Going, I guess we got to come back and just sort of give our thesis here at the 24th minute of a podcast. The thesis is, I'm partially responsible for this, but totals are being ignored too often now. A few years ago, I talked about how having somebody like Paul Reed for an entire season really wasn't that helpful in a 12-team nine-category roto league, certainly not 8-cat, but even 9-cat, from day one of the season to day 150 or whatever the season length is these days. It's just not. He's a negative impact player on a per-game basis for every part of this season except a few weeks, and not even the entire time that Embiid was out, but some of it, certainly. So having a negative impact player who just plays every single day, and when you add up all those stats together, you're like, okay, well, this is like basically around league average and it's, you know, ninth round kind of thing. It's not really real. Especially because, again, you're better off having somebody who plays in 60 some odd games, then you just fill in the other games on a roto games cap side as well. So I was making all of these arguments to you guys about how totals really only mattered for the top whatever chunk you want to call it, of players. And now I worry that that sentiment has been semi-mistakenly applied to a lot of head-to-head type formats as well. So for Roto, I still generally believe that this following sentence is true. Per-game ranks are way, way, way more important in a games cap format of any kind of games cap, typically that's Roto now, than totals. Totals matter because they add a little bit of context to it. And a better example of this would be, you know, the again, talking about Jalen Brunson up near the top of the board. He was very good per game, and he was also very good by totals and better by totals because he played in more than the league average number of ball games. That's the kind of third rounder you want. You want a third round per game guy who's also very healthy because every damn time he takes the floor, he's a positive impact fantasy player. You don't get inside the top 20 by totals without being useful. You just don't. And for Roto, as you slide down the board, you find that sort of cutoff point. But what I think is being lost in this sort of more recent, even stronger push to ignore totals is that the line in head-to-head is actually deeper than the line in Roto. The line being, of course, what type of player do you actually want to get games out of? All of them, obviously. You'd like all your important players to be healthy. But in head-to-head, there is more value in having a player who doesn't take zeros. There's a reason that, and some of this is anecdotal, but there's a reason that teams this year that drafted Mikal Bridges, who was a big-time per-game disappointment. He was like number 90 per game. But by totals, because he played in every damn ball game, somehow, some way, he ended up at number 55. That's not a false number in the way that the Paul Reed one is. Because having a guy that averaged 20 points, 4.5 boards, 3.5 assists, a steal, and almost 3 3-pointers every day for 82 ball games is useful. It is. Because you're getting something. And the funny part of this is, I think for head-to-head, Joel Embiid is a perfect foil or counterpoint to this. Joel Embiid was the number one player in fantasy basketball when he was on the floor, but he missed more than half the season. He played in 39 out of the 82 ball games. Dude averaged 35, 11, and 5.5 with 3 defensive stats, 1.5 3-pointers, 53-88 splits on super high volume. I mean, it's one of the best fantasy seasons we've ever seen. And his totals rank is 8 slots above Mikal Bridges. I would argue that it was probably easier to win a head-to-head league this year with Bridges than it was with Joel Embiid. Heavily because of the injury information. And then also, partially, you have to give credit here to the fact that Embiid's missed games happened in most people's fantasy playoffs. Availability is a big, big deal. So what I would ask you guys to do, and I think we'll probably do another show on this at some point. I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or farther down the line. What I would ask you guys to do is soften the stance a little bit. I know I started, or I don't know, I'm giving myself too much credit. I know that I was a cog in the movement to overweight per game numbers. And if we do as I asked us to do on yesterday's show and implement a games cap on every format, then that'll be true. Totals will become less and less relevant as more and more leagues have games caps. But until that day, getting a guy who plays all 4 of his games in a given week from day one until the end of the season has value, especially when you're talking about guys inside the top 100 on the per game side. So you use that information in concert and you figure out what makes sense. So don't ignore totals yet, people. They still have relevance, and they still require analysis specifically more so even on the head-to-head side. And honestly, that's like the reason that my team in 30 deep made the finals. Kyrie Irving missed a bunch of games in the middle of the year, but by and large, my other guys that I was relying on, like Brooke Lopez, DeMar DeRozan, these guys are not going to blow the roof off the building in their per-game numbers. DeMar was number 31, by the way. Ended up having a pretty damn good year per game when all was said and done. But dude played in 79 out of 82 ball games. That was unbelievably critical for my 30 deep team. And it's extremely useful for your head-to-head team as well. Get him out there, man. Get him out there. I still like Roto better, by the way. I think I'd still prefer to focus more on per game. But if you're playing head-to-head, you want guys that are on the damn court. Let's take a look at the games coming up tonight. In addition to this very brief look at yesterday, we already mentioned it for a moment. Lakers beat the Pelicans 110-106. Ended up being a fun one. Zion hurt his hamstring with about 3 minutes to go in the ballgame. He had 40 in a whopper of a ballgame. Super fun. Gabe Vincent slowly getting his legs underneath him for the Lakers. He was actually pretty useful. Not that you care for fantasy purposes. But to no one's surprise, Rui Hachimura faded as teams start to then key in on him a little bit more. This game went under the total because the teams couldn't really shoot. It wasn't that it was like a big turnover fest or anything. It was just that you get into these winner-take-all games and they slow down. That's just the nature of the beast, friends. Fewer possessions in games that really, really matter. Same story for Golden State and Sacramento. This game, everybody thought it was just going to be a track meet, and nope. Sacramento was trapping Steph Curry, trying to slow him down, trying to get teams into their offense later in the shot clock. Awesome games for Keon Ellis and Keegan Murray. I mean, look at that game for Ellis. 15, 4, and 5, 3 steals, 3 blocks, 3 3-pointers. Kid's a stud. We've been telling you that. So, do we just look at the under again today? It's certainly where you ought to start. Miami at Philadelphia, 208.5 is that obscenely low total. Philly's favored by 5.5 points. I would look at Miami on this one. I know Philly is the better team, and they've got Embiid back, and he seems to be fine. I do just think that there's going to be a little bit of rust to shake off, and Miami always ratchets it up come playoff time. That's not to say that Philly won't win. I just think it's going to be very competitive, and I think it's going to be pretty slow. Philly's going to be playing through Embiid in the post a lot. Don't be surprised if it stays under even this incredibly low line. And then this is the only one where I look at it and I'm like, could it actually go over? Yeah, maybe, because Atlanta, even when they try, they can't defend anybody. Chicago by 3, total of 225.5. That line of 3 for Chicago feels low, doesn't it? Is that a trap? Maybe. Chicago is down Andre Drummond, possibly down Ayo Dosunmu as well, so that's rough. And obviously they've been down Zach LaVine and Patrick Williams for the whole, basically the entire year. That's a weird one. Still, I think you start with the under and you work in the other direction. I think I like Miami and Chicago if you're talking about who I think has an okay chance to cover. But start me with some unders and try to talk me out of it is where I sit on the betting side. There will be no game on Thursday, so we won't have anything to break down then. Sacramento, New Orleans is Friday, and then the secondary play-in game on the East, I think, might actually be Friday also. I don't think they push it to Saturday, because I think the first round actually starts on Saturday. I might have that wrong. I think the West gets going on Saturday, so I presume it'd be weird to have the East play-in game going at the same time as the actual Western Conference playoffs. So I think we'll have a couple games on Friday, and then we'll get into some actual playoff games. So tomorrow, we'll have most of this series ready. Last two won't yet be decided. We'll probably get into some series prices on tomorrow's show. So that'll be a nice little not-so-medium deep dive on whatever you got going on there. All right, that'll do it for today. A nice little dive into totals. I have more to say on totals, and I definitely have more to say on per-game ranks and where do we find these various cutoff points. But that's the beauty of the offseason. We can just keep exploring it. We can go as far as we want on a topic until we feel like we've covered it enough. I'm Dan Vespers. Thank you again to everybody that's watching live on social media. There are still many hundreds of you, despite us hitting into the offseason here. Again, quick reminder, please go subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, whatever, so you get every show we do in the offseason. This is Fantasy NBA Today, and that's Wednesday, right? Sure. Okay. One show every weekday until we get back around to fantasy draft season. Let's have some fun, people. See you soon.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.